Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is an odd character. He says he longs for peace and justice for the people of Gaza, but all the while he acts as Israel's lawyer on the international stage. Such a lawyer is merely an undertaker of the rules-based order. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He's a legal and media analyst. In Tampa, we have Larry Johnson. He is a managing partner for Berg Associates, a former CIA analyst and U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. And in Oklahoma City, we cross to Joshua Landis. He's the Sarah Mackey Chair and Director of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Joshua, if I go to you first, what do you make of the U.S. Secretary of State? We had the U.S. President at the end of last month suddenly, bizarrely announcing a potential ceasefire agreement that came from Israel, came from the Israelis, but he is introducing it. And then we had the Secretary of State go on his eighth trip to the Middle East. I don't know why you have to keep going. If you're not getting any success, why do you keep going back? I watched him during his press conferences. He seems to have in his mind some kind of peace process that nobody else can understand. I mean, what do you make of this?
Well, I think it's really, you have to understand American politics. And Biden jumped in to this fray in Gaza almost immediately on the side of Israel, saying that there's no light between Israel and America, and I'm going to back Israel completely. Instead of withholding American approval and trying to get a gauge on the conflict and bring both sides into negotiations, America has really forsaken its mediating position. And now Biden is in real trouble. I think he thought this would be a short affair, that he could jump in on the side of Israel, reap the rewards of that, which are very important in the United States, because we have to remember that most Americans do sympathize with Israel. And certainly on the money side of things, which I think are extremely important here, pro-Israeli Americans have much more money than the Arab Americans. And that even though you might lose some Arab votes or Arab American votes, the money will make up for the difference. And that's been Biden's strategy since he began campaigning in Delaware many years ago. He's a dyed-in-the-wool Zionist. And I think that was the calculation he made, and it was a good calculation. The trouble is that Netanyahu has dragged this war on and set goals that are impossible to achieve, and Biden is trapped. He's trapped supporting somebody that he feels increasingly more uncomfortable supporting. But his entire machine is designed to, he cannot abandon Israel. And the Republicans are taking this to the bank. They are courting Jewish votes, Jewish money, and they're laughing at the Democrats who are beginning to cave in front of this war that is so bloody and is turning international opinion against America and ruining, as you say, the rules-based order that America pretends.
We're going to dive in on that one in the second part of the program. But Larry,
he's trapped.
Yeah, well, it's a trap, obviously. Larry, I mean, again, what we've seen, if we look at what's been called the peace process in the Middle East, which I think all of us would agree has been a sham from the get-go, but the United States now is taking to for itself being the sole arbiter, decider of what this policy should be. It hasn't worked for 30 plus years. Why do they think it's going to work now? And on top of it, Larry, with all of these meetings that Blinken has been going to 8 times now, what do you bet, my friend? All he's talking about is normalizing relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. It has nothing to do with Gaza. Go ahead, Larry.
Blinken's trying to lead a parade, but the problem is there's no marching band behind him. So what has transpired over the course of this this war that started on October 7th, and this coupled with what's going on in Ukraine, has led to the increased isolation of the United States. I mean, look, the U.S. playbook has become, it's got three themes: either you do what we tell you to do, or we're going to impose economic sanctions, or we're going to go to war with you, or we're going to run a covert colored revolution against you. It's well, those three. The diplomacy has gone out the door.
Yep.
You know, Blinken has proved to be, in my memory, and so, you know, I'm old enough that I go back about 70 years, the singularly most incompetent Secretary of State we've ever had. Because part of being, you know, this leading diplomat is to have some credibility in the world. Compare and contrast Blinken with Lavrov. Lavrov is, not only is he a big man physically, but he literally is a giant in terms of diplomacy on the world stage. He's somebody that the other countries respect. They listen to him. But with Blinken, he just flat out lies. And the lies are not even artfully done. They're crude and they're obscene. And it was put on display with this latest charade claiming that the peace plan that Israel came up with, that Israel rejects. Okay, yeah, that okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I've often said on this program, you know, that the saying is future historians may explain to us, but I think we're going to need psychologists to explain how some people have been behaving. You know, Lionel, one of the things that I think you and I have noticed, and you've been my wingman here all along since October, and I really appreciate that. But, you know, every time we talk, it's how the narrative has changed. You know, we're shifting, you know, the words, the memes, the you know, the emotions, you know, will you condemn Hamas? You know, Israel has the right to defend itself. You know, we must condemn anti-Semitism. It doesn't move the needle at all. And I think that's what makes the Secretary of State and the people around him look like buffoons. Sorry, Lionel.
Well, in addition to the memetics, now we have the tropes and the tropisms. You know, years ago, there was a law professor of mine when I said, that doesn't make any sense. And he says, no, you just don't understand. Well, in this particular case, not only do I not understand, it makes no sense. I'm trying desperately to figure out what is this particular plan. And why would Hamas or anybody agree to their dissolution? I don't understand that. That is not a point that makes any sense. In addition, you have this recently, I should say, when Andrea Mitchell is the Grand Inquisitor, the Torquemada, who not exactly is somebody known to be hostile towards the Biden administration, basically disassembled Blinken, who sounds in this timorous style of prevarication. I've heard hostage videos that come across more certain. If your diplomacy is based on an upcoming election, if what you're doing and what you're telling the American people is to satisfy voter blocks and demographics versus actually trying to solve the situation, we're doomed. One final thing, here in the fishbowl, as we always talk, the issues that absolutely captivate the news as to this particular issue are, quote, either pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian, or anti-Semitic rabble-rousers in subways, or people who deface homes, or the activities of groups of people showing violence, representing this collective, talk about memes, of this pro-Palestinian, anti-Semitic, pro-terrorist bunch of hooligans and you know, poltroons, and that's what we're seeing. That's what we're talking about. So again, I'm in this desert island in this parallel universe, and I come on and speak with you once a week where I get my kind of this re-injection of reality, but then I return back to this world of, does anybody know what's going on here? And the answer is resoundingly no.
Well, you know, Joshua, you know, talking about reality here, I mean, I can't help but think that, you know, the Biden administration and its allies in Europe in particular, what they really are irritated about is the perception. Everyone can actually watch this in real time. That's what irritates them. I don't think they're particularly bothered by the atrocities that are being conducted here. It's just that they're all associated with it. That's what bothers them. It's not the fact that a genocide is actually happening. Maybe I'm wrong, Joshua.
No, you're absolutely right. The effort to turn the page, and Israel's effort to get Al Jazeera out, to kill journalists, which has really been extraordinary, and to clamp down on the narrative and to set up all of these bots on Twitter and other places to try to push out the Israeli narrative has been an extraordinary effort. And the United States has aided in this effort. We've seen it on the college campuses. We've seen major donors to both presidents say that they're going to switch parties if they don't line up and continue to support the United States in its effort and Israel in its effort to destroy what is really a wholesale destruction of Gaza. You know, as we know, every university has been destroyed, and many schools, mosques, all the various hospitals, and particularly the news agencies. So this effort to hermetically seal Gaza has failed, though, because I think the international community, and particularly Arab Americans, have woken up as a force, and they're not intimidated, and they're getting their story out. Now, of course, it's reached mostly young people in the United States. We haven't seen older people really begin to turn against this policy, but increasingly you are. And there's been a ton of intimidation on campuses, on the news shows. You look at Wall Street Journal and you hardly see a photo of a dead Palestinian. It's amazing how the contrast between
Joshua, have you also noticed in the coverage of it, the use of the passive voice? People were killed. People were bombed. But you don't know who was doing the bombing, okay? Or a place, you know, they don't even want to say the word Palestine. They make it ahistorical, and it's very presentist. Have you noticed that as well?
Well, I think that, you know, it's all over the social media. People are constantly pointing out the hypocrisy of these papers who generally decry passive voice, but here, when it comes to headlines for the Gaza, it's all passive voice. There's no subject doing anything to anybody, and everything is a big mistake. So this is, you know, the edifice of the U.S. narrative, Israeli narrative.
All right, Joshua, I have to jump in here. Gentlemen, we have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to Joshua. Unfortunately, I had to interrupt you, but to go to a break. Now we're back. Go ahead.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of the narrative, the international community has really begun to sally forth and put a lot of pressure on the United States and Israel, isolating them. And there's been a steady drumbeat of efforts to push back on this, whether it's from the international court saying this is tantamount to genocide, whether it's from three European countries, Ireland, Spain, I believe it's Norway, recognizing the Palestinian entity in the UN, and vast majority of the international community have now recognized the Palestinians as a national entity. So this is the pressure. And there's been widespread demonstrations across Europe. And this is beginning to take a toll on America's standing in the international community.
Yeah, well, you know, Larry, this administration touted, you know, the rules-based order. I've done programs on it, quizzing everyone, what does it actually mean? Because it never is explained, it's just understood. But Larry, you know, I've mockingly on this program called Blinken the Undertaker, and he's the undertaker of the rules-based order. You cannot back a genocide of a people and say that this is part of the rules-based order. I mean, the U.S. has turned into a mockery around the world for reasons that Joshua just explained. Go ahead, Larry.
But if you're trying to understand U.S. foreign policy, you need to be wearing a neck brace because your head's going to be spinning in both directions. You know, you're going to have to call a lawyer to go get you some compensation. The narrative breakdown all across the front. Number one, the United States, we support international law, but we're going to punish the international criminal court for daring to issue warrants against the Israelis. The other part of this, though, is this consistent lie that Hamas is a major terrorist group. The facts of the matter are, these facts are drawn from the website of the Israeli Foreign Ministry from the year 2000, September of 2000, until April of 2024, April 26. The Foreign Ministry publishes the facts of attacks against Israelis by Palestinians or foreigners by Palestinians. During that entire period, 618 attacks, 1,552 deaths on the part of Israelis or foreigners. Compare that with the 45,000 Palestinians that are dead. And you're telling me Hamas is the major terrorist organization in the Middle East? No, it's Israel.
Well,
Israel, by virtue of body count. But
all of us know, but Larry, you know, it's never said in Western media that, you know, made it clear. I'm speaking the obvious. I'm sorry I have to say it in my own program. These are occupied people. This is an occupied land. They are a resistance group. That is, if you actually were to say that, then people would say, oh, resisting what? They're resisting an occupation. Right. I mean, if you cast it that way, then it starts to make sense, you know, because everything didn't start on October 7th. Lionel, let me go to you. Joshua's already mentioned it. I mean, it gets down, unfortunately, what determines what side of genocide you are is money, apparently, with donors and all of this. But looking at the election here, that's why Biden came out and was such an awkward speech in an awkward moment, and he made the Undertaker to pursue it in the Middle East on the ground. But we have to admit that among some voters, genocide is on the ballot, and that is something they will not compromise. And, you know, again, you're saying you're in the bubble here. That's 2, 3, 4, 5% of the Democratic voting population. That can turn an election. Lionel.
We always reference this, and I think you gentlemen will agree. You know, when I first started in talk radio, it was 1988. And this was in the time of, you know, Rush Limbaugh and AM radio. And there was this article of faith that you never did one of two things. You never dropped the F-bomb, and you never ever strayed anything regarding Israel. It was just verboten. And it wasn't even said. It was a narrative. And frankly, it was perpetuated and promoted and promulgated, not out of any kind of Zionist theory, but we just didn't know better.
We really
didn't know better. Now what I am seeing is a proliferation, an absolute tsunami of opinions and platforms, and I am able to pick up my phone and tap into the world and realize, my God, I had no idea. And there are so many people right now who are so shocked. Number one, they feel like they've been misled. Number two, they're not worried about definitions of genocide versus ethnic cleansing versus apartheid. And now we're finding out that narratives, case after case, narratives as to the most inconceivable Sam Peckinpah horror shows are being disputed. And we're having relatively sane media organizations say, no, that did not happen. So now we're saying, what is happening? So a lot of people may not know they're voting, as you say, Peter. They may not be aware of it. But for some reason, they are awakened. This woke iteration is something nobody ever entered. We're awakened. The world is. And you can't use the same tropes that you used to use 10 years ago.
Well, I mean, Lionel, when we started doing this, the first thing you said to me, everything has changed. And now I will look at the term being woke in a very different light, I have to admit. Joshua, have we just all been played? I mean, this whole charade about, you know, Israel's peace plan and all that. And at the end of the day, Hamas can't say yes. I mean, have we been played? Was this all theater, Joshua?
Well, it is in part theater because the United States has failed to push on the two-state solution for 30 years now. And we're paying the piper for it right now. We thought we could brush the Palestinian issue under the rug. And as we saw with our statesmen saying that Middle East is at its most stable point before the uprising attack, and believing that the Abraham Accords would go forward without any problems. And now that is all crumbled. And we're seeing that not pushing forward the two-state solution, allowing Israel to really take the West Bank and turn the West Bank into what is going to become Gaza, is just set these series of time bombs in front of American foreign policy in the Middle East, where we're losing our allies, we're losing any goodwill, and it is going to leave America very isolated. And we're seeing already Iran becoming much stronger because of this war. Russia is becoming stronger despite Ukraine and so forth, and is establishing relations with China. We've just got Iran announcing that they're going to have a new trade route with India for Russian goods coming back and forth between India and so forth. And so all these alliances are building, and the Gulf and Saudi Arabia are going to make off like bandits because of this, because the United States is so worried about losing them to China that it's willing to sort of cast in front of them a weapon systems that they wouldn't used to sell and this defensive agreement. And America is becoming desperate to try to shore up its position in the Middle East.
Yeah, but Joshua, horrible. But Joshua, let me throw it over to Larry. I mean, all these points you bring up, but Larry, how is all of these things in America's interest for a little tiny apartheid state halfway around the world? They're willing to lose all of this goodwill and geopolitical influence. I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, yes, but it underscores how corrupting the money that's in the political process has become. I mean, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, has been so powerful in buying off members of Congress and trying to punish them. There's been very, very few that have tried to stand up against that pressure. And so it has completely skewed the American political process. You know, we're really hostage to what I call the Exodus meme. If you remember the movie Exodus, betrayed, you know, poor little blonde Karen, you know, this dead, delicate Danish girl who gets murdered by those evil Arabs at the end of the movie. And as the Israelis march off, you know, determinedly to stop, you know, to have freedom, and the music swells. That's really been the theme of American politics for the last, you know, since that movie came out 60 years ago. And it's starting to change, though, because there is growing dissatisfaction, growing opposition in the United States to saying that we have to support Israel at whatever price. And then on top of it, the Israelis are the consummate, self-destructive personality. Their zealotry is leading them to do things that literally draw comparisons with how the Nazis treated the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto and the Lodz Ghetto and the ghettos that sprung up throughout Poland. And the only thing the Israelis are not doing are loading the Palestinians up on trains and taking them to death camps. They prefer to keep them in place and kill them.
Yeah, well, you know, Lionel, we have one minute left. You know, we're in the stage of pre-bunking, just silencing people for expressing or citing facts, even facts. Okay, and you know, we've seen so many personalities now have their careers changed because they spoke truth to power. Lionel, 40 seconds.
Well, we're going to be finding out that there's going to be a kind of a red badge of courage, that a mark of truth. You know, there's an old adage that you only take flak when you're over the target. And people in the old days of being debunked as a crackpot are now basically saying you must be saying the truth. And interestingly enough, in this new platform of digital media, we now listen to them even more so by virtue of the fact that they've been expelled from the public conversation. So it's having a reverse effect.
They crack down.
Well, certainly, I think it'll be a badge of honor, and I think for all of us, and I'm thinking about our legacies here, where were you when you saw all of these things happening, and did you say anything about it? And I think it's very important, even to, you know, for thinking about your own humanity. Anyway, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in New York, Tampa, and in Oklahoma City. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, cross talk rules.